the Bears and Browns get together here at First Energy Stadium. Months removed from being a Buckeye with Heisman hopes, Justin Fields returns to the Buckeye State as the Chicago Bears starting quarterback. Mayfield in the gun, back to his left. That's Kareem Hunt now. A triangle of receivers to the right side of the formation. Safety's back, pedal lead, corners up tight, snap back. Here comes the blitz.
Oh,
here comes Quinn, unblocked. They get Mayfield, and down he goes! 94 shot out of a cannon to bring down Baker Mayfield. And the Bears get the ball, turning them over on downs. Mayfield under center, takes fakes. Setting up, pressure coming back, chasing down Mayfield, and down he goes! Sack! And a big one on fourth down to the 31-yard line. And the Bears, for the second consecutive drive, take over on downs. He'll play fake to Montgomery, and immediate pressure, and spun down to the ground. A big sack right there, eating him up the middle. J.D. Van Clowney, shotgun, pulls back out of fake, blitz, and down he goes! They were coming big time. Jeremiah Owosu-Koramoa landing on Justin Fields. It's a sack of five, and you knew it was going to happen today. Snap back, four-man rush. Protection holds for a moment. Now Myles Garrett gets free, and down he goes. They bring four. He takes the snap, steps up against the heat. Won't be able to dodge the pocket, though. He's ripped down to the ground and brought down. Bears will give it up on third down and long. Sacked on the play by, was that Garrett?
Yes.
Myles Garrett, second sack of the day. Higgins slot left, Peoples Jones out to left, OBJ right snap. Mayfield throwing to the end zone, middle of the end zone, going up to grab it. Hooper for the touchdown. Here comes the pressure, trying to eject the pocket, being chased from behind, tripped up and dropped. Myles Garrett again. Now the Bears 0 for 6, averaging 10.3 to go on third down. That is an absolute recipe for disaster. His third sack of the day. Quick snap. Play fake. Coding, he slipped and fell. Touchdown to the ground there by the safety, Ronnie Harrison, the second. That's considered a sack right there.
Yep.
That's seven today. They're going to hand it off right. Kareem Hunt breaks the tackle, runs right. Oh. Takes another one in the 20 to the 15. Race to the end zone right. Touchdown. Kareem Hunt goes in from the 29. Broke the first tackle. It was history then.
Two missed tackles there. Had one on the Brown side of the line of scrimmage. And then Eddie Jackson downfield. He was kind of out of control when Kareem was running upfield.
Robinson to the right. Snap back. They're bringing extras. They're coming after Fields. Trying to chase away. Myles Garrett tracks him down inside the 15-yard line. And a 4.5 sack afternoon for the former number one overall pick. Bears going for it from their 35-yard line. Snap is back. Here comes pressure. Myles Garrett again. Had him, lost him. Now Clowney just rips him down to the ground. They are sparing no punishment on Justin Fields. The rookie quarterback sacked 14 yards for the ninth time today. Just an overall difficult day for the Bears offensively, and it leaked over to the defensive side of the ball. They were on the field a ton, and they dropped a 26-6 ball game to the homestanding Cleveland Browns.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, my goodness gracious, Mr. David. That one will leave a mark on everyone involved.
Morning, Mully. Yeah, it's Monday. It's a Bears Monday. That will leave a mark. I wonder, as we gather here today, if that's the low water mark of the Matt Nagy era. I've got to say that's got to be one of the more disappointing Sundays. And there have been many.
Yeah.
And last year was rough, and they did lose six in a row.
Yeah.
But given the hype, given the hope, given the Justin Fields' first NFL start, what happened in 26-6? We just heard part of it, and boy, I thought we were going to be here all day listening to every single sack. That was a long afternoon. I'm not sure it has gotten much worse for Matt Nagy since arriving to be the head coach of the Bears.
I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, the very fact that they put that kid in that position, the very fact that all the things we talked about you needed to do, you saw virtually none of them. Moving the pocket and RPOs. There were some RPOs. And trying to let him attack the edges and trying to figure out a way to sort of take that college offense and apply it to what the Bears are doing. I saw that kid in the pocket, and I saw him getting killed in the pocket. And David, you know, just for a little icing on the cake, you have him stay in, and you go for it on a 4th and 10 when you have absolutely no chance of – I mean, you're averaging, what, a yard, 1.1 yards a game? I'll have to check the Twitter account of one Jimmy Graham to verify. But the idea that you go for it on 4th and 10 just to get one last sack of him, right? I mean, I don't know what else you're thinking. And he hurts his hand, and he has to get an X-ray on his right hand after the game. I don't understand why you did that to him. What was the purpose of that? And to me, that's a microcosm of the entirety of what we saw on Sunday.
Poor judgment, loss of poise, and you put him in harm's way, and it was indicative of everything else that happened throughout the course of a long day. Mully, 40 inches per play is what the Bears averaged. 1.1 yards, 40 inches per play. And as some smart aleck texted me, it is a game of inches for the Bears. That was you. And well played, but that was embarrassing offensively. And look, you know, Monday morning a week ago, we came in and talking about the victory over the Bengals and all that was implied by the debut and the first start of Justin Fields. And what did we say from day one? We said that this week, this game against the Browns would say more about Matt Nagy than it did about Justin Fields. And you know what? Unfortunately, we were 100% correct, because that was about the coach being unwilling or unable to adapt and adjust his game plan around the skill set of Justin Fields, and it was an offensive disaster.
He's looking for the whys. He's looking for the whys, okay? That's what he said repeatedly in the post game. He took full credit, I guess, blame for the loss. And he said he's looking for the whys. Look for some wisdom while you're trying to pick apart the whys, okay? Because that was just – that was nonsensical. That absolutely was mind-boggling, the way you insist on doing things instead of – we had heard all along, we're going to do what the kid does best. We're going to play the plays. Come on, man. What was that?
Looking for the whys by a mirror, because it'd be staring right back at you. That's the problem right now. And I was stunned at the lack of the lack of his ability to grasp common sense. And when you have a quarterback as inexperienced as Justin Fields is, when you have an offensive line as limited as yours is, then I think you have to come up with creative ways, common sense ways, to move the pocket, to keep him on the move, to play to his strengths. And yet we saw very little of that. We saw almost none of that until it was too late. And I don't understand his inability, Matt Nagy's inability, to grasp what I think is obvious to so many other people. And is it stubbornness? Is it just lack of poise? I don't know. We'll spend the week talking about it. And unfortunately, we may be spending the entire season trying to figure this one out.
It felt a lot like stubbornness, David. It really did. I mean, when you stop and pick it apart and you look at what he's doing in the face of listen, he fixed whatever defensive problems the Cleveland Browns had. And he did it with the kind of stubbornness. In the postgame, he said, well, we could have run all that stuff you're talking about. I'm paraphrasing, but they knew it was coming. So basically, we shocked them by running nothing. Basically, you never expected us to do this. No, because it was the wrong thing to do. I guess you can say, oh, thanks, coach, for your candor. Oh, coach, thanks for stepping up and saying that. What else could he possibly have said after that unmitigated disaster?
Yeah, you know what? Save your candor. I'll take competitiveness. The Bears now for 2 out of 3 games have been non-competitive offensively. They haven't challenged anybody. The Rams was, okay, a study in conservatism because they didn't want to take a shot because they couldn't protect their quarterback, and they were intimidated by Aaron Donald. They beat the Bengals. Congratulations. That may be one of a handful of victories you can count on one hand this year. Against the Browns in Cleveland, and a defense that came in struggling a little bit and wanted, needing to find its identity. Well, you gave them an identity. Myles Garrett, dare I say, may not have many better days than he enjoyed yesterday against a Hall of Fame offensive tackle in Jason Peters. Jason Peters at times had to be wondering why he answered the phone on the fishing boat. And the rest of us were wondering why, too, because he was bad. You know, I can't wait to hear him break down the X's and O's this week, and we can marvel over his degree of detail. My goodness sakes, how did you get beat on this sack, Jason? Because this was terrible from one guy to the next. It just went bad to worse.
Okay, David, I get that, and I understand that, and I totally agree with that, and we know they had a compromised offensive line, and it was a shock the guy played the week before. But why not help him? Garrett has taken over the game, do you not have a tight end that help him? A running back that could help him? He's 39 and he's a turnstile and he's playing hurt. And you literally leave him one on one with a guy who's like 14 years younger than him and in the best time of his life. I mean,
thank you. Thank you for checking me. I got carried away. It's not just Jason Peters. This was a collective failure. Not just from Jason Peters getting beaten like a drum by Myles Garrett. This was Ryan Pace neglecting the offensive line. This is the Bears coaching staff overestimating Juan Castillo's impact to an ability to coach these guys because they're bad. And Matt Nagy's just total ignorance of what to do with a quarterback who – we have to be careful now he's not going to ruin, because you don't like the way this is trending. Because if you can't grasp what to do in his first NFL start, how are you trusting this guy to develop the best quarterback, the most talented quarterback you've ever had as a franchise?
Listen, that was the emperor unclothed, right? I mean, you saw their naked arses as they stood there, hopefully in shame. I don't know how else to say it. It was, you know, anybody that had been
look
on
away.
Board. Exactly.
Look
right.
away.
You do not want to see this.
No.
But that is effectively, it's the emperor unclothed.
It is.
I mean, goodness gracious. I can't believe that's the game plan they came up with. I can't believe that's the game plan they stuck with right down to 4th and 10. And, you know, hey, well, who, you know, do you need a left wrist if you're quarterback? It was just insane to me. And I got to tell you, it was so hard to watch because they were still in that game. They were in the game right up to the point where the defense was just run over. And they were bound to be run over because that one, did the Bears have, I was sitting there like 47 seconds. What was the time of possession? They didn't have the ball at all. They couldn't get a first down. They were one of 13 or 14 or 11, I don't even know, on third down, but they got one of them. It jumped out at me. Oh, David. Oh, my goodness.
They ran 42 plays, right? That's how many plays the Bears ran. So they did not have the ball very much. They were 1 for 11 on third down. And, again, they were non-competitive offensively. Yeah. They only had the ball for 20 minutes and 26 seconds. Defensively, for three quarters, you're exactly right, Molly. Fair is fair, and the defense held its own for three quarters. But at some point in time, okay, not to make excuses for a group that had its own share of issues, and I still am waiting for somebody in the secondary, number four, to make a physical tackle that makes me say, wow. But at some point in time, attrition takes over, and the Bears' defense gets worn down. That's what happened against a running team that good and running backs that dynamic in an offensive line, you know, that imposed its will on the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking they were even close in that game. That game deserved to be like in the 50s to in the single digits. That's what you were watching unfold. But somehow the game remained close because Cleveland couldn't score and certainly couldn't score against the Bears. But it was as lopsided a loss as you're ever going to see.
Is that what it's going to take, though, Mully, to get the ownership's attention, to get, you know, the management's attention? Is it going to take a circa 2014 Packer embarrassment, Patriot embarrassment? Is it going to take another several embarrassments like yesterday before people start to ask the difficult questions at Halas Hall? Because this doesn't appear to be getting any better. And in terms of yesterday, it couldn't have gotten much worse. 47 yards, 9 sacks, 6 points, no touchdowns. All right, this is the offensive guru who isn't. And you have to start wondering what direction this all is headed if you're George McCaskey.
Well, I can't believe you wouldn't sit up and take notice to that one. I mean, I got to be honest with you. The 4 turnovers created by the defense changed the narrative for a week. But I look at this team. They are now favored, I think, by 4 points against the against Detroit coming to town. David, they should not be. Is it 5, Dustin? You said, are you waving 5? Okay. It's 4. Yes, yeah, I said. And honest to God, when you think about that, you how are you favored by 4 points? I know that's not a good team. That team was competitive. That team, they have like all their coaches, every coach on that staff is a former NFL player because they want to be able to relate to everybody and whatever. How many of those guys, how does that apply to the Bears here who look like, and I'm not saying you have to have guys that played in the league, but I'll say if they lose that game, I'm willing to get that.
The Bears staff is a collection of discarded coaches, guys who were not in the league when they joined the Bears. Like, oh, but you know what? I saw the Bears were advertising on Indeed.com, and I think I'm going to go and maybe apply. Maybe I got a shot here because I'm out of work, and maybe I can join their staff. That's the way it seems, and that's the way it's unfolded, and that's what you can't have. Now, look, the Lions, you're right. The Lions are the Lions, and Detroit is always going to be Detroit. But that was a competitive game yesterday. They almost beat a very good team in the Ravens, and they required NFL history before that wasn't the case, and a little help from the referees as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you look around the league, I got to tell you, the Bears stand alone right now with the ineptitude. It's ineptitude. There's no way around it. And I mean, some of these coaches might be better off applying for that that Bulls beat writer job at the Tribune. I think that's advertised online too. All right. Well, let's just be in me.
What? Wait. Are you looking?
I'm sorry.
Are you applying?
It was pointed out to me that it was on Twitter. That's all. I'm not
breaking news.
I love the Tribune. But don't get me wrong.
Okay. Bottom line, and we've got all morning to talk about this. 2 out of 3 games, the Bears have been embarrassed offensively with 2 different quarterbacks. What's the common thread here? The approach hasn't worked. Something needs to change, or everything will change.
Fire the offensive coordinator, and I don't mean Bill Lazor. I mean the play caller, and see if something can change. We'll get to all of it. I got to tell you, we'll get through it in the 5 at 5, but it's about getting through it because this doesn't feel like Victory Monday. It's a Victory Monday because we're all winners. I understand that.
No, stop
but
that.
My God. Victory Monday on the score. We got the 5 at 5 next. Help! Mully and Haw.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Matt Nagy took the blame for the Bears' offensive woes, saying the following.
I obviously, as a head coach, did not do a good enough job of getting this offense ready to go, to be able to play and win a football game. So it starts with me. It ends with me.
Would you argue with that assessment? Is it noble or foolhardy? Can you think of anyone else to blame?
Oh, I'll sprinkle some blame to Ryan Pace if you need me to. Look at the offensive line. They have a compromised offensive line, and who's in charge of building the team? And, you know, I know we'll get to it, but Jimmy Graham, for God's sake, targeted now twice. Jimmy one catch Graham. I mean, it's hard to not think of him that way. And he's on this roster, and other people that might have helped are not on the roster. So I'm sorry. It's hard not to sprinkle a little blame to Ryan Pace, just because of the horrible personnel issues that you had going into the season. But God bless you, Matt Nagy. I mean, are we supposed to say thanks for the candor, thanks for stepping up and taking the blame you clearly deserve? I would not argue with him. He was god awful. The play calling was just pathetic and horrible, and they did nothing, and I mean nothing, to put that kid in a position to win. He said something on Friday, guys. He said something like, wow, he's so far ahead and he's wowing us with what he's doing. We saw zero of that. Did that give him the confidence to run plays that he wants to run and that he shouldn't try to run? Is that what it is? Just god-awful. Help the offensive line. Protect the kid. Just, that's pathetic.
Yeah, ignore all the rhetoric coming out of Hallis Hall about the quarterback situation until we see some results. We have seen none. We don't have anything to look at and to point to in the first three games that show any evidence of offensive competence or of offensive innovation or just some clue of how to execute a game plan that takes advantage of the skill set of the players on your roster. This was a collective failure. Yeah, it starts with Matt Nagy because you have a generational quarterback that you're trying not to ruin, and to embrace that, all that comes with that, You've got to be able to accept the fact that you no longer are the most important part of this offense, Matt Nagy. You no longer are the most important piece of this puzzle. That is number one. And number one is get out of his way. That's the number one priority. Get out of Justin Fields' way. Let him play quarterback. Let him be the guy that people recognize in Ohio, all right? People from Columbus who drove over to Cleveland to watch this game were like, who's that? He never looked that bad at Ohio State. He never looked that scared in the pocket playing for Ryan Day. What happened to Justin Fields? How did you ruin him so quickly? Okay, that's an overreaction, but that's an understandable one from yesterday. Yesterday gave us every reason to overreact to how bad things are at Hallis Hall. He called a game plan that reflected no amount of awareness, had no idea of how to take advantage, to move the pocket, to throw in a bootleg, to use the running game to set up play action, to take a shot down the field until it was too late. The offensive line, that's on Ryan Pace. One of these days he's going to realize, and probably after he's fired, that, boy, it would be nice to build a football team from the football out. Worry about your offensive line first, and then maybe the rest of the things wouldn't seem like such a disaster. So, yeah, we can start with Matt Nagy because he's out there being candid, even if his team can't be competitive. We can start with Matt Nagy, but it doesn't stop there because this is a collective failure.
I'd agree. I think it starts with Nagy. I think collective failure is a good way to put it. Obviously, if you say collective, then Mully, part of your answer, Ryan Pace is definitely part of the collective. Just, I'd like to just add one more name. Just, he's part of the collective. So it's, a collective means everybody is. But Juan Castillo is supposed to be able to coach these guys up. He's going to create. Fetty is going to be a Pro Bowl. A Pro Bowl player. I mean, Pro Bowlers don't jump off sides. A prop bet should be from our friends at Rivers. Like, how many penalties will Fetty have? Like, over under 2.5 every single game? It's absolute joke. And again, I won't say that this is like grammar school, but it's definitely high school football stuff. I mean, at one point, Garrett, who I think at the time had 2 or 2.5 sacks, is on the outside shoulder of a Hall of Famer's shoulder. He's on the outside shoulder. There is nobody there. I watched the play like 10 times. There's nobody next to him. And he looks in. The tackle took a step in looking for a blitzing running back, or a linebacker rather. I mean, what you know, when the guy crosses your face, when there's nobody there, you got to touch him at least. At the very least, put a hand on him.
You can't
look.
Give me inside rush.
I mean,
you
it's
can't
just
do that. Yeah.
Crazy. So, yes, it starts with Matt. It's collective. But you want to know if really who it ends with? And I know they're not going to sell the team, folks. But really who it ends with? It ends with the McCaskies. Because they're the ones that have to make the, I guess in their opinion, the difficult decision on tearing it all down and starting all over again, at least with the people that are coaching the players and picking the players. You can't fire the players. You can't fire the owners, but the owners are the ones who have to make those hard decisions. And right now, after yesterday, especially after the second half yesterday, those decisions don't appear to be that hard.
That's a really good point, Dustin. And I think it's one that maybe a month ago, I don't want to speak for Mully, but I think we both kind of maybe wouldn't have taken as seriously as maybe we will this morning, because what we saw is far worse than anybody reasonably expected. And if you are George McCaskey, and you do go back to 2014, coming off an 8-8 year with Mark Trestman, things got away from the Bears in a hurry because there was a loss of confidence and credibility with the head coach and everything that followed.
Scoreboard update.
From the Northwestern Football Update Studio, I'm Dustin Rhodes. Here's what's happening. Bears sacked 9 times on a 26-6 loss to the Browns. The Bears had a total of 47 yards of offense, their worst effort in 40 years, while the Browns' offense racked up 418 yards. The Bears' defense did have 5 sacks. Mack had 2. Quinn, 1.5. The Bears host the Lions Sunday. And believe it or not, Bears are favored by 4. Mason Crosby, a 51-yard walk-off game-winning field goal last night for the Packers, 30-28 over the 49ers. And the Vikings got their first win of the year, 30-17 over the Seahawks. 6:30 tonight, right here on The Score, Monday Night Football. The Eagles will be at the Cowboys. White Sox in Cleveland on Sunday, went to the Sox 5-2. Lucas Giolito allowed 5 hits, struck out 6 in 6 innings of work. White Sox 3 games behind the Astros for second in the AL. They've got a makeup game later on this afternoon in Detroit. The Cardinals have now won 16 in a row. Sunday, it was 4-2 over the Cubs. Obviously, that meant the Cubs were swept. In the 4-game series, the Cubs' home portion of the schedule is over, and the Cubs are at the Pirates on Tuesday. And really quick, the 43rd Ryder Cup captured by the Americans. Final score, USA 19, Europe 9. That 9 number is a key number today. The Wildcats host Rutgers, Minnesota, and Iowa. Also Purdue this fall. Buy the tickets, nusports.com.
Well, that's a good question.
Should Matt Nagy fire himself as offensive coordinator again? How long will it take for him to do that? Is there any danger he loses his job and becomes the first ever head coach the team launches in season?
3 very good questions, fair and understandable. What time is it right now? Okay, it's 5:34. That's what time that's how long it should take for him to walk into his office, you know, look at the clock and record the time that he, as the head coach, fires his play caller. Now, immediately. This is the only direction you can go. Matt Nagy needs an intervention. If that requires his boss, if that requires his kids, if that requires some player, Matt Nagy needs an intervention. The only direction the only way you can salvage this season after what we saw yesterday, which was an embarrassing debacle, and I'm running out of nouns and adjectives here. I have to get my thesaurus. The only way you can salvage something is by recognizing what's wrong, diagnosing it, and then coming up with some possible solutions. And the only possible way out of this is to relinquish play calling duties, and the head coach must fire the play caller. You've got to do that because you've also got to show your bosses that you're willing to exhaust all possibilities and try out all the resources available to you to get better. And, you know, again, if you want to get to the wise, look in the mirror. Buy one. See it. That's staring back at you. So, yeah, I do think that he should act immediately before it gets too late. I don't know that he will, so I don't know that I will answer how long it will take him to do that because it could be all season. And I don't think, Mully, that he loses his job and becomes the first Bears head coach fired during the season. That doesn't seem like it's a McCaskey way of doing business. Historically, you can disagree with it, but the question is, do I think it will happen? No, I don't. I think they will ride this out. I think a lot of their focus is maybe on the Arlington Heights project as a big picture family, you know, concern, and I don't think they're going to fire their head coach in the middle of a year.
Yeah, they've never done it, and I would doubt that they're going to do it. However, I would say that Drew Brees put it very succinctly. Drew Brees yesterday said they need to start building that offense to the rookie strength, put him in a position to succeed. That's the run game. That's play action. That's RPOs. That's getting him on the perimeter, allowing him to see throws. That's where he is at his bets. That's where he'll make good decisions. And also, that's where he'll be able to make plays with his legs. They're going to have games like this where he's going to have to drop back at times. But let's help him out by chipping, nudging these guys, giving him an opportunity to process and find completions. We've said that all along. Everyone in America, okay, whether you're a Hall of Fame track quarterback or you're just a Bears fan, everyone understands this except for one guy. And yes, he needs to fire himself as the offensive coordinator. If the family won't step in and take him out as coach, and they won't, then he needs to do something to give them reason not to. I wish to God they could petition the league for a bye week and 2 home games, and then they could maybe try to start this process. But goodness gracious, you can't go on like this. I don't think we can sit through another game like that.
I think it's easy for us to all say that he should fire himself. But if he fires himself, can you put Bill Lazor in that spot? Because didn't he fire Bill Lazor as the play caller and then give it back to himself? Like, would you then need to go to like DeFilippo and really say, okay, we're gonna go with the guy who supposedly has been holding the extra time with Justin Fields and see if he can get through to this guy? But that's why it can't be done. If you fire yourself as a play caller, I think you put your one step out the door. You are suggesting to ownership that I cannot do my job. Because he took it back, I don't think you can do this again. I think he has to hold on to this tight. Because if he cannot develop a quarterback that the general manager decided was worth trading up for again, he's already had a shot. And, supposedly that was, well, that wasn't Nagy's guy. That was Pace's guy. And they didn't know they were going to have a chance at Nagy when they, Okay, this quarterback, Nagy's got to show that he can develop this guy, or what in the world is he here for? What is
he
here for?
Part of that is showing growth, I think, as a coach, Dustin. And I think it's a very good point. But if Matt Nagy were to step forward and do what you say he can't do, I think that it would be interpreted. Everything's about how you present it. And if he presents it as a way as he's going to get better as a head coach by stepping back and let somebody else call the plays the way they did last year when it worked, I think that people would respect that, because it would be getting out of his own way and not putting his ego ahead of the team.
I'm taking a little bit of time here to say this because I know that these questions could go on and on each and every day.
How much of what happened Sunday against the Browns will change your opinion of Justin Fields? Did Fields' play justify those who thought the Bears should take their time, or underscore the need to get him experience? What do you think the Bears will do?
You know, I was really surprised at how bad it was, frankly. I knew that they would have some issues, but I don't know what that was. That was just god awful. And as far as changing my opinion of Justin Fields, it did not. I think he's a talented guy. I think he can do a lot of things. I think it changed my opinion of how you use him. And really, my opinion didn't change, but my opinion of how they're going to use him changed. Did he justify those who thought the Bears should take him? This was more about the coach than the player. There's not a shadow of doubt about that. We said that going in, and we feel that way coming out. Was Justin Fields good? Not necessarily. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he was good at his job. There was a reason probably that they left open the idea of Andy Dalton coming back and did not put Andy Dalton on the IL, although there was a report that he probably could miss three games. That was from Adam Schefter on Sunday morning, so it was a little odd. But I got to tell you, they really owed it to themselves to probably put Foles in at the end of that game, just to give this kid a break, just to make sure he's not sacked like he was. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff online. The Bears had barely a second to work with once the ball was snapped. He's never going to get the ball out that quickly. So he does hold on to the ball a little bit. There are some things that they probably wanted to get a lockdown and assured before they started him. But that game plan was pathetic. That was not a game plan for Justin Fields. And so I am not going to hold him accountable for not running Matt Nagy's offense the way Matt Nagy envisions it. That's not what you do with a player of this particular type and this particular quality.
Good. I agree with you 100%. Look, you will get a lot of strong opinions on the Bears this morning until 9 o'clock and all day here on The Score. It is a Bears Monday. But one of them will not have to do with Justin Fields and his ability and his potential in light of that clunker yesterday in Cleveland. His passer rating, his completion percentage, none of that matters. Forget it. Forget it, people. Avoid it. Resist it. Don't draw any hard and fast conclusions or change your mind about the potential or the abilities of Justin Fields based on yesterday, when he was not put in the best position to succeed. Best coaches, the great ones, they understand how to put their best players in a position to succeed, to give them a better chance to win. That didn't happen. Maybe it never will with Justin Fields. I don't want to go there yet. But whatever happened yesterday was not on Justin Fields. So I am not going to change my opinion. I'm not going to dampen my enthusiasm. I'm not going to change one iota about my thought on Justin Fields. Heck, last week I was bum of the week on Les's show because people thought I was being mean to him by saying they should take their time. They should still probably be, if they can't take their time, they need to be smarter. They need to be better. They need to be responsible in developing this quarterback because it's on them, Matt Nagy and his committee of quarterback coaches. This was not on Justin Fields. My opinion of him has not changed one bit.
Yeah, I won't say that my opinion on him has changed one bit, but I think this does give a little bit of credence to those that thought the plan was a little too rushed. I mean, behind that offensive line, based on the skill players and the play caller and the collective group, I could see why. And you can't put him out there, Mully, to your point when you answered, you can't put him out there and get him hurt. I mean, if you get him hurt, now you're really talking about
right. The
fact that his development will go backwards. Because when you're hurt, you can't even run the scout team. You can still sit there and watch, but we all watch football. Now, again, they watch it a different way than we watch it. They put more time and hopefully effort into it than we do. But it's not the same. The development would go backwards. He was rushed. He had no time. Nobody would have had any time. But, David, you're also right. I don't know how many times he was put into a position to succeed. Too many times he was put into a position to fail. And I think he also he doesn't want to be known as the running quarterback. I think when what we don't know is what were his options. Okay, first option is always, you know, when he takes that shotgun snap, is the first option to always throw the ball? And then second is to run? Is it ever run first? Oh, wait, run's not there. Take two steps back. Find the quickest guy you can. Like, those are the things we don't know. So it's hard to say that he was or wasn't put in a position to succeed. But when you're not, when the sacks are piling up, after a team gets 2, 3, 4 sacks, at that point, it is time to put some tight ends in the game and to play action pass and to run the ball a little bit more. Just a little bit.
I'm struggling how to answer that one.
After a roller coaster weekend in Cleveland for the White Sox that included 2 out of 3 victories but close calls for Dylan Cease and Lance Lynn, how do you feel heading into the final week of the regular season? Does your bad outweigh your good?
I'm looking for the bubble wrap that Dustin has stored in the storage closet because after Friday night, oh my gosh, Molly, I thought of you watching Dylan Cease and thinking, how in the world did that happen? It hit him right in the elbow. And then I'm watching Saturday, I'm like, wait a second, Lance Lynn is, what's the trainer doing on the mound? And I'm like, what is going on here? Why can't the White Sox stay out of harm's way? They didn't do anything wrong. All they did was clinch. They're in the playoffs. Stay healthy. So, yeah, to me, heading into the playoffs, because I saw them on Friday night win a very good 1-0 game. Their bullpen came through. Boy, Craig Kimbrell looked good. And then yesterday you saw Giolito. So I want to say after a weekend in those 3 games in Cleveland, the good outweighs the bad. As long as we don't factor in bad luck, because it seems like bad luck is the only kind of luck the White Sox have had, especially when it comes to injuries. So I wanted to kind of just ignore that, stay away from black cats and don't step on sidewalk cracks and all those things, because Dylan Cease got hit on the elbow. Thank goodness he's okay. We think he's going to be okay. But between Rodon, Lynn, and Cease, goodness sakes, who's healthy? So I think, yeah, the good still outweighs the bad to me with an asterisk.
You know, I read that there's a thing called anatidaphobia, which is a fear that you're constantly being watched by a duck or a goose. And I don't know how that applies here, but these are the sort of phobias that I am quickly building as I watch the White Sox. Imagine the hell of being a child and playing Duck, Duck, Goose if you have that particular condition. But I got to tell you, I'm watching the White Sox, and that Dylan Cease, the guy is pitching absolutely insane. He's developed now. He somehow has found himself a pitch that he's throwing. It's a changeup that he's throwing like 77 miles an hour following his 97-mile-an-hour fastball. And apparently Frank is screaming in the studios of NBC Sports Chicago every time he sees it, a big Frank. And he said that it takes him from a $12 million pitcher to a $30 million pitcher. That's how incredible this pitch is. Because it's a changeup for a guy that throws like Dylan Cease, it literally looks like it's some kind of a, it, the bottom just falls out of the thing. It was incredible. And he was just firing. And you're sitting there like, oh, my God, this guy's getting better as the season. And he gets hit in the elbow. Oh, my God. I mean, and he goes down. He's holding. And then he's going to try to pitch. And mercifully, Tony takes the ball away. And then, you know, in the postgame, they're talking about how smart that was. And Tony mentions in his press conference that when a guy has something, you don't know if he's changing anything, he can hurt himself, it's not worth it. Then Lance Lynn, they have to visit the mound with Lance Lynn. But he gets to keep going. Ah, you know,
why?
He'll be fine. Because
why?
He's Lance Lynn. I don't know.
Oh, God.
I don't know. It was unbelievable. And I'm literally sitting there just kind of – I don't even know what to tell you. I think there are geese watching me. There's a flock of geese and a bunch of ducks, and they're staring me down. That's how I feel. I just feel like I got to get Dustin's bubble wrap, and I got to get to the bloody playoffs.
Well, the good news is, White Sox fans, you're in the postseason. And at this point, I get the angst, but just take out your smartphone or pen and paper. Thursday, October 7th, game one, ALDS. Okay? October 7th is game one of the American League Divisional Series. Just point to that. You can't get anybody else hurt. Get to the ALDS. You're there. You've earned that right by winning the division. ALDS, October 7th, game one, a week from this Thursday. Just get there and try to keep everybody as healthy as possible.
Oh, boy. Good question.
First down at the 32. Mertz. And intercepted again. Wow. Notre Dame. Pavel. Jack Kaiser. 66 yards. Trying to throw the ball late to the far side of the field is never a good recipe.
The highlight courtesy of Fox. How good is Notre Dame after their 41-point explosion Saturday at Soldier Field over Wisconsin? What will you remember most about the game? Did it surprise you the scoreboard was still able to post a score in the 40s?
That's me.
Yeah, that's a gratuitous shot. I like it. You know, that game, honest to God, that game reminded me of the Bears against the Bengals. That, you know, once you started getting turnovers, you were going to win that game, and it was that simple. And I thought Notre Dame, I thought that third quarterback was excellent. That drive was excellent. And once they started getting the ball, it was all over. Once you take Wisconsin and they're a defensive-minded team, Notre Dame beat them. Notre Dame's defense was the best defense on the field. And the takeaways won the game. And it was as simple as that. It wasn't complicated. It wasn't one of these things. That Notre Dame defense absolutely dominated that game.
Absolutely. Riding the pine. That's what Notre Dame did. Drew Pine, the third string quarterback, down to their third offensive tackle, and they win with two pick sixes, special teams touchdown on the return. That's a coaching victory, apropos, because Brian Kelly, congratulations to him, passes Newt Rockne. Think about that. In Rockne, in the city where Rockne grew up, a few miles away, Brian Kelly makes history. And you know what? It was Wisconsin, so it meant something. That was a very good Wisconsin defense that Notre Dame, you know, moved the ball against with backups. And I think that's something I didn't expect to see. Impressive win for Notre Dame. I will remember the fact that Brian Kelly made history here at Soldier Field, and they did score 41, 31-3 in the fourth quarter. Overwhelming fourth quarter for the Irish. Congratulations to them. A Notre Dame moment, if you will, on the lakefront.
I don't know how good Notre Dame is yet, but I know Wisconsin stinks out loud. That's what I know for sure. That they're not good. Their coaching's not good. They got no heart. The game plan was terrible. Notre Dame's offensive line has been depleted. They should have, you know, we talk about the Bears all morning getting sacked 9 times. Notre Dame should have been sacked 100 times. They should have won that battle, and they just did not. I mean, the game was not as lopsided as it looked, as Wisconsin was trying. So there were a couple pick sixes. There was a punt return, right, for a touchdown, Rocket Ishmael-esque, if you will. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to remember 25 returning a kick in Hester's house, number 23, a special teams touchdown like that. That will be what I remember. And this week, now Notre Dame in the top 10, host number 8, Cincinnati. So we should ask this question again, because if Notre Dame wins that game at home, Notre Dame, unless they have a collapse of some stupidity against this is the last ranked opponent they have at this point. So they win this game, they're going to be part of the college football playoff.
Ooh, interesting.
I don't know. Clemson could come back. I loved watching that. All right.
That was
so
great.
Mean.
That was
let's,
great.
Let's get to we're going to get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. You've heard the lines ringing. People really want to talk about this. We're going to get to it. What? I don't even know. I don't even know what you'd call that. I mean, we got to come up with something. The clunker in Cleveland sounds fine, but you could get one even more
the brown
descriptive
out.
Than that. Wow. Matt Nagy's brownout?
Yeah.
I like it. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the score.